from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Lily Jamali. 56 people are now confirmed dead in Butte County from the massive campfire, which is still just 35% contained this morning. The death toll climbs each day as more remains are discovered in the fire zone. Family members wanting to know if their loved ones are among them can now help the sheriff there by providing a DNA sample. Here's KQED's Alex Emsley.
The technology and experts to run it are still arriving in Northern California, but coroners are already starting to gather relatives' DNA to compare with samples taken from the dead. The rapid analysis should be able to confirm a match within a few hours, according to Butte County Sheriff Corey Honey.
Of the 56 human remains that we have tentatively identified 47 of them, but we are waiting on DNA confirmation, which we're hoping will be expedited by the fact that we brought in the rapid DNA system.
The sheriff says more than 200 people initially reported missing have been found safe, but there are still over 100 unaccounted for. For the California Report, I'm Alex Emsley in Chico.
Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke is trying to tamp down comments that President Trump has made in recent days about the fires in our state. KQED's Danielle Venton was there as Zinke spoke to the press after a visit to damaged parts of Butte County.
California's wildfires have become increasingly political, especially after presidential tweets blaming the state for poor forest management and threatening to withhold funds. Zinke himself, in comments to Breitbart Radio this summer, said Western fires were the fault of environmental terrorist groups preventing forest management. Today, his tone was more conciliatory.
There's a lot of reasons for fire. Some is the fire seasons have gotten longer, the temperatures have gotten hotter. The amount of material, the dead and dying timber, is elevated. You had the mortality rate of the beetle kill.
He says he's not here to point fingers and thinks California, which has become a bit of a political punching bag, is a great state. For the California Report, I'm Danielle Venton in Chico.
California's largest utility saw its stock plummet more than 20% yesterday amid growing concerns that its equipment may have caused the campfire, the state's deadliest and most destructive ever. KQED's Marisa Lagos has more.
Pacific Gas and Electric stock nosedived to its lowest level in a decade, a little over $25 a share, down from around $48 a share last week. The sharp losses came after the company filed a report with federal regulators, warning that it would not have sufficient insurance to cover its losses if its equipment started the still-raging campfire. Andy Smith, the utilities analyst at Edward Jones, says the investment community doesn't like uncertainty.
And there's a ton of uncertainty right now around PG&E. And so rather than wait for answers, you know, they sell shares net for the hills.
Smith says PG&E stock began its downward trend last week after the company disclosed there was an incident with its equipment around the same time and place that the campfire started. But that fire isn't PG&E's only concern. State investigators blame the utility for 16 wildfires last year, and the largest fire of 2017 is still under investigation. Smith says that indicates we won't know whether PG&E is at fault in the latest blaze anytime soon.
We still have basically very few answers from a year ago. So I think this is going to take a long time.
PG&E has been pushing for changes to state law to protect it from liability when it starts fires, a debate that's likely to resurface in Sacramento next year. For the California Report, I'm Marisa Lagos.
Governor Brown was in the fire zone in Butte County yesterday, but he is also wrapping up his final term in office. And in one of his final acts, he's announced one more nominee to the California Supreme Court. KQED's Katie Orr reports.
Brown has chosen 45-year-old Joshua Groban to fill a vacancy on the court left by the retirement of Associate Justice Catherine Werdiger. Groban has worked for the Brown administration since 2011, advising on high-profile litigation and policy issues. He's also overseen the appointment of some 600 judges throughout the state. Groban graduated from Harvard Law School and earned his bachelor's degree at Stanford. Once he's confirmed, Groban will become Brown's fourth appointment to the seven-member high court. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in San Francisco.
We're going to go to Tijuana now, where hundreds more Central American migrants have arrived in the last 24 hours. The California Report's Sasha Coca caught up with some of them at the beach.
Hours after reaching Tijuana, dozens of adults and kids were whooping and splashing in the chilly Pacific Ocean right next to the border fence. A welcome release after days of walking and riding on buses and trucks. 17-year-old Carlos Zelaya ducked under the waves, then rolled on the beach with some younger kids making snow angels in the sand.
No, ya está peligrosa la violencia. Más uno de joven.
Zelaya says Honduras is dangerous, especially for young men like him. He says he was pressured repeatedly to join a gang and threatened with violence if he didn't. So he and his brother set off for California, a place he'd only seen in the movies, until he finally glimpsed it through the fence. He says he wants to find a phone to tell his mom he's safe. He and his brother plan to sleep on the beach until Tijuana authorities figure out how to shelter the thousands more migrants arriving on the caravan in the coming days. A little way down the beach, Natalie Osorio sat on her tiny backpack and neatly folded blanket, all she'd carried with her from her home in rural Honduras. After 3 nights without sleep, she could hardly keep her eyes open. Osorio says she and other single women protected each other along the way. She's glad she left her two kids at home after watching so many moms struggling with children on the journey.
Tanto que hemos luchado y que nos tiren de nuevo para atrás. Es una tristeza grande porque imagínese cuánto hemos luchado.
She says after everything it took to get here, it would be a tragedy to be deported back to Honduras. For the California Report, I'm Sasha Coca in Tijuana.
You might remember another caravan we reported on this program this spring. KPBS's Jean Guerrero spoke to a teenager who was part of that caravan. She's made it to the U.S. side and is now seeking asylum.
A teenage mother from Honduras spoke with me on condition of anonymity. We're calling her Gabriela because she feared for her life in Tijuana.
I think they can find me here, just like in Honduras. I'm scared, even though I'm far away.
Gabriela, who's 16, was at a Tijuana migrant shelter with her 8-month-old, Johandri. She said she was fleeing death threats. It all started a year ago at a school in Honduras, where Gabriela says she got a message from a local cartel boss called El Diablo through his associates.
They asked if I could see him, but who wants to meet a person from a gang? I just ignored them.
When she got pregnant by her boyfriend, El Diablo's associates stopped her on her way home from school. She says they had another message.
They said they weren't going to let the boy be born.
Terrified, she hopped on a bus towards the U.S. Her son was born in a public bathroom in southern Mexico. There, she joined a caravan of asylum seekers, the first one that caught President Trump's attention in the spring. When they arrived at the San Ysidro port of entry, Gabriela thought she was finally safe. But then she heard that U.S. officials were separating babies from parents at the border, something that has since slowed.
I couldn't turn myself in because I don't have the boy's birth certificate.
When we spoke to her, she was working to get Johandri's documents through Mexico's Child Protective Services in case she was separated from her son. In the meantime, she tried not to leave the shelter for fear that El Diablo could find her. Attorney Nicole Ramos says gangs like MS-13 and 18th Street have networks all the way to the border.
These organizations they're highly organized. They have amazing communication systems, and they are able to track people and find people if they have an interest in finding them.
And it's not just the gangs that worried Gabriela. She also feared deportation by Mexican immigration officials, and not without reason. Mexico receives millions of dollars each year from the U.S. to secure its southern border. It has deported about 16,000 unaccompanied minors this year. Back at the shelter, Gabriela played with her son.
I talk to him. I play with him. I laugh with him. We have unforgettable times together.
Shortly after we interviewed her, Gabriela was able to cross into the U.S. with Johandri, where she's now pleading her asylum case. But there's a catch. The Department of Justice used to let people claim asylum for fleeing gang violence, but it's made it harder to do that. So Gabriela could still end up deported back to El Diablo. For the California Report, I'm Jean Guerrero in Tijuana.
Support for the California Report comes from Personal Capital, providing customers a real-time dashboard view into all of their financial accounts with insight-driven wealth advisory services. PersonalCapital.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And Supermicro, a Silicon Valley-based manufacturer of energy-efficient data center hardware solutions, celebrating 25 years of growth and innovation. Learn more at supermicro.com.
In case you missed it, Republican Congressman Jeff Denham, representing the Modesto area, has lost his seat to Josh Harder, a 32-year-old Democrat. Until a few days ago, Denham's election to a fifth term seemed imminent. Here's the California Report's Alex Hall in California's 10th congressional district in the Central Valley.
In Turlock, two men use chainsaws to prune almond branches in the haze that's drifted over from the campfire, burning 3 hours north.
My name is Jeff Lee, and I managed 250 acres of almonds. Sorry to see Jeff Denham lose his seat, because he did do a lot.
Lee says he feels uncomfortable now that Democrats hold a supermajority in the state legislature. He says California can't afford to lose any more Republicans.
Well, considering the way California is going, it's not really a shock. California is definitely a liberal state. You know, you had to see it coming.
Not all farmers around here feel the same. Angel Tosti lives at her family's dairy farm down the road. Even though Denham made getting more water for farmers his signature issue, she says the congressman didn't deliver. So this time, she voted for Harder.
A lot of Democrats are a little too far left, a little too pro-environment, but Jeff Denham didn't do what he said he was going to do.
Tosti hopes Harder will now bring farmers the water they need. Stephanie Jacobs lectures at CSU Stanislaus in Turlock. She didn't vote for Denham either.
He's a farmer and he has close ties to the community, but I have called his office multiple times. I've gone to his office. There's no response.
What constituents in California's 10th district need, Jacobs says, is someone who's going to listen to them. She's hoping Josh Harder is that someone. In a statement, Denham said it's been an honor to represent the Central Valley and Congress these past 8 years, and that the enormity of the responsibility was never lost on him. For the California Report, I'm Alex Hall in Turlock.
A few weeks back, we learned of allegations coming from a whistleblower about psychiatric care for inmates in our state's prisons. Well, a federal judge here has now appointed an investigator to look into those claims, which include what can only be called shocking stories about life behind bars for the mentally ill. Here's KQED's Julie Small.
U.S. District Judge Kimberly Mueller oversees court-mandated improvements to mental health care in California prisons in a decades-old lawsuit. In her 8-page order, the judge wrote that an experienced fraud investigator is needed to determine whether prison officials used inaccurate and misleading data in reports about inmates' treatment. That is what the chief psychiatrist for prisons alleged in a whistleblower report given to the court last month. Dr. Michael Golding further accused officials of trying to make mental health care appear better than it is in order to justify cuts to psychiatric staff. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small.
And that's the California Report for this Thursday, November 15th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Lily Jamali. Have a great day.